It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
And so right. Love has come and the number goes. That's what the people say. Don't they know?
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null on location. I'd like to welcome all of you. We're going to give you a lot of new insights about alcohol in any amount and your genes and heart disease, plus a whole lot on good quality living, a longer life. But today, being a holiday, I'm doing this program live. I want to get into some issues that generally are not talked about. And I want you to give us your feedback. So you're going to have a lot of time today to call in on multiple different issues. For example, have you heard about the Black Cube? Well, the Black Cube is inside the shadowy Israeli firm accused of trying to undermine the Iran deal. You'll hear about it. One island, two worlds. I've had the privilege of being in the Dominican Republic, or Hispaniola, and the island is divided into two parts. The larger part is the Dominican Republic. The smaller part is Haiti. You would think you're in two different universes. I'll explain. And why America made that happen, and the French. So, we're going to solve all of our problems by having a new group of people come up as we baby boomers retire and take our place in making critical decisions. Let's assume then that they're well-read, they understand the world they're living in, they understand the multi-dimensional aspects of cultural assimilation in our society. So what's their latest book they've read? We'll find out. I think you'll find it interesting. I'm going to be continuing with our discussion about what I see as some of the problems of parenting, especially the new wave of feminism that is trying to demasculinize men. And for so long, I did not hear the more enlightened voices of the spiritual feminists. I'll be telling you who they are, and then you ask yourself, well, why haven't I heard these people? These are very smart women from all over the world who have very good and instructive solutions for our problems. So why aren't they allowed to share their points of view? Why aren't they invited into the different forums? Well, first talk about the fall of men and the agenda behind it. And then you'll have an opportunity to share your solutions. And so I'm going to talk about all these things on today's show, but we always start with the latest on health and healing. This is from Imperial College in London, and scientists have revealed a new link between alcohol, heart health, and our genes. The researchers investigated the faulty versions of a gene called Titan, which carried one of the 100 people or 600,000 people, and depends upon if you've got the gene. And this particular gene is crucial for maintaining the elasticity of the heart muscle. And faulty versions are linked to a type of heart failure called a cardiomyopathy or dilated cardiomyopathy, where your heart's just not functioning properly. Now, new research suggests that the faulty gene may interact with alcohol to accelerate heart failure in some of the patients with the gene. This was published in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology. Now, why is this important? Because at no place in the article that I read is it telling you to stop drinking alcohol. And in fact, for decades, we were told that one, then two glasses of alcohol a day actually helped your heart and helped you live a longer life. Now, I'd written a book. It's been out of print a long time. It was called Alcohol and Nutrition. And in it, I showed that any amount of alcohol damages the heart muscle. EBIT also damages the liver. In fact, it damages to about a million more or less cells in the brain, the heart, the liver, and the kidneys. So why are we not getting this message? Because everywhere you go where they're socializing, there's alcohol. And in fact, now, the new thing all across America is for younger people, mainly the sons and daughters of millennials, or who are millennials, whose parents are either millionaires, and there's 10 million of them, or their parents are professionals, and there's 17 million of them. So there's a whole lot of credit cards able to pay for drinking designer beers. So the new thing is a designer beer. They're generally about 50 to 60 bucks a beer. And you could go through 3, 4, 5 of those in an evening. And that's just one evening. And they're not getting drunk. That's not the purpose. It's as if there's this whole new sophistication about, like, wine clubs drinking wine. Now there's these beer clubs where people hanging out and doing this. They're causing a lot of damage to their liver and their heart. Now, if they have this gene defect, they could be causing really severe heart disease. No discussion of it. Just a little background on this. Once I started hearing from people that they were doing good for their heart because they were drinking alcohol each day, and a lawyer, in fact, a well-known lawyer, was sitting across from me in my office at 83rd and Broadway, and he was not doing well. Couldn't figure out why. His diet was actually good. He was exercising, and he played racquetball, which is very fast and requires a whole lot of stamina, which is good. He worked out in the gym, did yoga. So everything he was supposed to be doing, he was doing, except, and I said, well, there's something we're missing here. He's, no, I'm doing everything that I'm supposed to do. In fact, my cardiologist now has me on 2 glasses of alcohol a day. I said, well, what kind of alcohol? He said, I take bourbon. How much? Well, I'm drinking 2 glasses, probably around 12 ounces each. You're drinking 24 ounces of bourbon a day. That's up around 80% alcohol. I said, stop all the bourbon. Stop all. And then the question was, because his cardiologist or all other cardiologists who supported that alcohol was good for your heart, could they have been wrong? The question is, how could so many smart people get it wrong? And that's what they did. They were all wrong. All the doctors, nurses, nutritionists, dietitians, all wrong. Alcohol is not good, period. How do we screw up so badly? To find out, I went to the original study, and it was based upon the French paradox. The paradox being that the French have a diet that's very high in saturated fats and animal proteins and lots of dairy. So I went to France. I'd already been there, but I went back to France, and I looked in the city and the markets and the restaurants. Then I went into a friend of mine has a home in France, and I had an opportunity to visit his friends who were middle-class people. And the answer just stuck out as easily as it could be. If instead of being in a office writing about something, you were actually in people's homes, you would have known the difference. First, I noticed, yes, they do consume a lot of dairy in France, but they also consume more fruits than you could ever imagine, far more than the average American. They also don't have a lot of food in their refrigerators. They tend to go on a daily basis and get whatever produce they're going to consume that day for their main meal. They take their time. They do slow cooking. They use a lot of herbs. They don't like anything that's sprayed. They like organic. They exchange foods between neighbors and friends. I went to the farmer's markets, a farmer's market that was larger than any that I'd ever seen, where people will buy what they're going to, let's say they're going to make a stew. They might buy a case of tomatoes because it's reduction, low heat. And every meal that I ended was not ended with cake, or pie or a la mode ice cream, it was ended with fruit. And those that did drink, the ones that I saw, had no sulfate, low alcohol, just natural ferments of grapes, high in resveratrol. That's a whole lot different than what we were told have alcohol. But that shouldn't have been a surprise, because the same identical thing happened when Dr. John Yutkin, the first person, I believe, to hold a chair of nutrition in Europe, he was working with a paper from Dr. Burkitt of Burkitt's lymphoma. And Burkitt was in East Africa, and he noticed in the some 60-plus hospitals in his area, you just never saw diverticulitis, heart attacks, strokes. Never. You just didn't have these problems. You also didn't have obesity. And the reason that Burkitt found that they didn't have this was because of the amount of roughage. So he wrote a paper on it about the power of roughage. Then Yutkin took that paper and then postulated that if the average person in England was eating so much refined carbohydrate, which they do, a lot of rotted teeth, a lot of ruddy complexions, a lot of unhealthy people because of their diet, then what if you brought more roughage back? But it was translated from roughage to fiber. So then in America, we didn't talk about roughage. We talked about fiber. Roughage would be the whole grain, the husk, the endosperm, the whole piece of grain or legume taken into the system. So then people started adding a little bit of fiber. And when I did my first paper on fiber, I used Connecticut as an example because there were statistics available, and it was 5 grams of fiber a day. Constipation was endemic in the United States. It really should be not 5 milligrams a day or 5 grams a day. It should be closer to 50. So that's where someone took alcohol. If you were talking about a red sulfate-free organic wine, that's reasonable. If you're talking about bourbon, gin, that's not. That's what happens when the transition occurs. So anyhow, stay off all the alcohol if you want a healthier heart. Now, from the University of Toronto, they're talking about something I mentioned twice last week, and that is increasing physical activity is linked to a better immune system, and especially if you have cancer. And this is very important because we have a hormone in the body. It's not actually a hormone. It's a inflammatory marker, protein inflammatory marker called C-reactive protein, or CRP. It's associated with a higher incidence of disease and death in women, especially women diagnosed with breast cancer. So the key is lower your C-reactive protein. Well, a plant-based diet will do that. Vitamin C and coenzyme Q10, and also vitamin E in mixed tocopherols will also do that. But what they found here is if you exercise, if you go out power walking for an hour, it also lowers your C-reactive protein. It's a non-pharmacological approach, and it can help mitigate C-reactive protein when it goes up. Heart attacks and cancer go up right with it. Quote, in this study, we found that physical activity is consistently related to better immunity in the early survivorship period post-treatment, when inflammation could relate to other illnesses or diseases, and when the women are focused on getting past treatments and overcoming the lingering side effects of breast cancer diagnosis. So, the takeaway message for everyone, but especially women with breast cancer, the more you exercise, the longer your chances of living. From the University of Science and Technology comes a paper on the mechanisms of how moderate sunlight exposure improves learning and memory. Now, we knew it helped with our prevent cancer. This is the first study I've seen on this, but it does, and that's what. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Cell. It's an article entitled "Moderate UV exposure enhances learning and memory by promoting a novel glutamate biosynthetic pathway in the brain. So, if you were to go out in the sun, even on your lunch break, and let the sun hit your, if you can, your arms, your legs, your face, for about a half hour, that's going to help your brain. Something that does not help us is canola oil. Now, according to the latest study that was published in GreenMed Info, memory loss comes from consuming canola oil. Canola oil producers claim that it's the healthiest oil you can use, but I beg to differ. Now, it's been heralded as a modern alternative to olive oil, and they've done a lot of promotion on it. The Canola Council of Canada pulls no punches, calling it the healthiest of all commonly used cooking oils. All right, I challenge them to prove it. Now, there are a lot of people are consuming canola oil. They consumed last year 3 million metric tons. But it's also called rapeseed oil. And so canola comes from the rapeseed plant and was called rapeseed oil until the early 70s when the promotional campaign to rebrand the oil was devised in conjunction with genetic modification to remove two of the plant's undesirable elements. One is urelic acid and glucosinolates. So my suggestion is stay away from canola oil. And also, exercise helps treat addiction by altering the brain's dopamine system. This is University of Buffalo. This is new research, and it's identified a key mechanism of how aerobic exercise can help impact the brain in ways that may support treatment and even prevention, meaning if you exercise, you can help prevent depression. This is a cardio aerobic exercise, brisk walking, biking. In effect, what you're doing, you're increasing your heart rate and you're breathing in your circulation of oxygen through the blood, and that's associated with decreasing many negative health issues, including diabetes and heart disease and arthritis. But it's also reducing stress, anxiety, and depression. And there are a lot of studies showing that you're creating endorphins, and the endorphins are giving you dopamine hits. So quite simply, if you're under stress, go for a workout, and it will normalize dopamine signaling, and that can help you. And finally, an antioxidant supplement benefits CF patients. University of Colorado, published in the American Journal of Respiratory and Critical Care Medicine, documented the benefits of supplements for subjects with cystic fibrosis, which, by the way, is a genetic disease characterized by the production of a thick mucus that impairs lung function. And this is a randomized trial that found that when people were taking the antioxidant in this double-blind trial, they did terrific. And that's important. And this was coenzyme Q10 plus gamma, that's G-A-M-M-A, tocopherol, T-O-C-O-P-H-E-R-O-L. They all make a big difference turning off inflammation, including inflammation in the lungs. So that's important. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're 20 minutes into our program. We're going to take a brief break. And when we come back from the break, we're going right into a short segment about Americans and the books they read. After all, you do want to have people helping in all the social change who are more literate, right?
Book?
Oh, yes.
I don't read books. But what's it called?
Can you name a book?
No.
Can you name a book?
I don't read books. Yeah, that's it.
A book? The Lion King.
The movie?
Yeah, the book.
You read the book The Lion King?
Yeah.
You just think. Dang, hold on, man. I haven't even read it. Hold on. Let me think. Hold on. Can we cut this and do it again?
Can you name a book?
A book. Any book? The Jungle Book. It's not a book, is it?
It's a movie.
Jungle Book, sure.
Is it?
Both.
Are you sure?
No.
Does Magic Magazines count?
No, those wouldn't be books.
That's correct.
I can name Moby Dick. That's an artist. He wrote a book called Horse. I like that book.
Moby Dick was the author.
Yes.
And the book was Horse.
Yes. That's what I said, huh?
What was the last book you read?
Probably Dr. Seuss.
Dr. Seuss.
Dr. Seuss. Dr. Seuss, maybe?
I haven't read a book for like 12 years.
I'm drawing a blank. Jeez. I need books. Sorry.
Yep. I'll bet you are sorry. And exactly how are you supposed to solve any of the problems of the world if you can't even name a book, let alone have read a book? And yet, we're supposed to overcome global warming problems, hunger problems, a government gone crazy problems. Yeah, you're supposed to understand when you're faced with bias, tyranny. I don't think so. I think we've got a nation of very dumbed down people. And the problem is, a lot of it is self-inflicted, intentional ignorance. Why are Americans disinterested in learning about the world they live in, learning about other cultures, learning about problem resolution without conflict, understanding the nature of our domestic and foreign policies, why we're not spending a penny to ghettoize our cities, and why we spend huge amounts of money for regime change, trillions of dollars, with disastrous results? And this seems to be on no one's I'm interested list. What are your thoughts? Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now let's hear. This is a short segment from Tucker Carlson on the fall of men and the agenda behind it.
Noah Peer, who has killed himself in recent years, at least one. If you're a parent, you may have noticed that your daughter's friends seem a little more on the ball than your son's. They get better grades, they smoke much less marijuana, they spend less time playing video games, they go to more prestigious colleges. If you're an employer, you may have noticed that your female employees show up on time. The young men often don't. And of course, if you live in this country, you've just seen a horrifying series of mass shootings, far more than we've ever had. Women didn't do that. In every case, the shooter was a man. Something ominous is happening to men in America. Everyone who pays attention knows that. What's odd is how rarely you hear it publicly acknowledged. Our leaders pledge to create more opportunities for women and girls, whom they imply are failing. Men don't need help. They're the patriarchy. They're fine, more than fine. But are they fine? Here are the numbers. Start with the most basic, life and death. The average American man will die 5 years before the average American woman. One of the reasons for this is addiction. Men are more than twice as likely as women to become alcoholics. They're also twice as likely to die of a drug OD. In New Hampshire, one of the states hardest hit by the opioid crisis, 73% of overdose deaths were men. But the saddest reason for shortened lifespans is suicide. 77% of all suicides in America are committed by men. The overall rate is increasing at a dramatic pace. Between 1997 and 2014, there was a 43% rise in suicide deaths among middle-aged American men. The rates are highest among American Indian and white men, who kill themselves at about 10 times the rate of Hispanic and black women. You often hear America's incarceration crisis. Well, that's almost exclusively a male problem, too. Over 90% of inmates are men. Now, these problems are complex, but we know that they start young. And relative to girls, boys are failing in school. More girls than boys graduate high school. Considerably more go to and graduate from college. In schools at every level, boys account for the overwhelming majority of discipline cases. One study found that fully 1 in 5 high school boys had been diagnosed with some form of hyperactivity disorder. That's compared with just 1 in 11 girls. Many of them were medicated for it. The long-term health effects of those medications, not fully understood, but they do appear to include depression in later life. Women now decisively outnumber men in graduate school. They earn the majority of doctoral degrees. They're now the majority of new enrollees in both law and medical schools. For men, the consequences of failing in school are long-term and profound. Between 1979 and 2010, working-age men with only high school degrees saw their real hourly wages drop about 20%. Over the same period, high school-educated women saw their wages rise. The decline of the industrial economy disproportionately hurt men. There are now 7 million working-age men in America who don't work. They've dropped out of the labor force. Nearly half of them take pain medication on any given day. That is the highest rate in the world by far. Far fewer young men get married than did just a few decades ago, and fewer stay married. About 1 in 5 American children live now only with their mothers. That's double the rate of 1970. Millions more boys growing up without fathers. Young adult men are now more likely to live with a parent than they are to live with a spouse or a partner. That is not the case for young women. Single women buy their own homes at more than twice the rate of single men. More women than men now have driver's licenses. Whenever gender differences come up in public debate, the so-called wage gap seems to dominate the conversation. You've heard it. A woman makes 77 cents for every dollar a man earns. That's a statistic that you'll hear a lot. Presidents have repeated it, many candidates. It's everywhere. And yet that number compares all American men to all American women across all professions. No legitimate social scientist would consider that a valid or meaningful measure. The number doesn't mean anything. It's intentionally misleading. It's a talking point. Once you compare men and women with similar experience, working the same hours in similar jobs for the same period of time, that's the only way you can measure it, the gap all but disappears. In fact, it may invert. One study using census data found that single women in their 20s living in metropolitan areas now earn 8% more on average than their male counterparts. By the way, the majority of managers in the workplace are now women. Women on average are scoring higher on IQ tests than men are. Even physically, men are falling behind. A recent study found that almost half of young men failed the Army's entry-level physical fitness exam during basic training. Fully 70% of American men are now overweight or obese. That's compared to 59% of American women. Perhaps most bafflingly and terrifyingly, men seem to be becoming less male fundamentally, measurably. Sperm counts, for example, across the West have plummeted. They're down almost 60% since the early 1970s. Scientists don't know why this is. Testosterone levels in men have also fallen precipitously. One study found that average levels of male testosterone dropped by 1% every year after 1987, and it's not related to age. In other words, the average 40-year-old man in 2017 would have testosterone levels 30% lower than the average 40-year-old man in 1987. There is no upside to this trend. Lower testosterone levels in men are associated with depression, lethargy, weight gain, decreased cognitive ability. Nothing like this has ever happened to a population this big. So you'd think we'd want to know exactly why. What's going on? How do we fix it? And yet the media ignore that story. It's considered a fringe topic somehow. Nor is it, believe it or not, a priority in the scientific research establishment. We checked, and we couldn't find a single NIH-funded study on why testosterone levels are falling. We did find a study on, quote, pubic hair grooming prevalence and motivation among women in the U.S. So those are the numbers, and they paint a very clear picture. American men are failing in body, in mind, and in spirit. This is a crisis. Yet our leaders pretend it's not happening. And in fact, they tell us the opposite is true. Women are victims. Men are oppressors. To question that assumption is to risk punishment. Even as women far outpace men in higher education, for example, virtually every college campus supports a women's studies department whose core goal is to attack male power. Our politicians and business leaders internalize and amplify that message. Men are privileged, women are oppressed. Hire and promote and reward accordingly. Now, that would be fine if it were true, but it's not true. At best, it's an outdated view of an America that no longer exists. At worst, it's a pernicious lie. Either way, ignoring the decline of men does not help anyone. Men and women need each other. One cannot exist without the other. That is elemental biology. It's also the reality that each one of us has lived with our parents and siblings and friends. When men fail, all of us suffer. How did this happen? How can we fix it? We hope that this series, each Wednesday this month, answers those questions. Jordan Peterson is a professor.
This brings us to this issue. I would like, before I share my ideas, I'd like to hear yours. What is happening is very serious. Let me just give you one example. I'm doing the research, and I always do my research prior to doing a documentary. And I'm doing research now on the whole idea of medications that people take, especially service personnel, to help them deal with post-traumatic stress and other conditions, anxiety and depression. 22 a day are killing themselves. The vast majority of those are men. They're using their handguns, putting it in their mouth, blowing their brains out. You don't hear about it. You don't hear about how difficult it is for these people to get any form of help. You don't hear about how long the waiting list is if you have any complaint that you can prove was from your military service to get in to see a specialist. Might take 3 years in some cases. Well, if you have a serious problem, 3 years, you may be dead. In fact, people are dying. How many people have killed themselves just since Iraq? I'm not even going further back than that. 120,450. Now, wouldn't you think that if 120,000 people in a society die from anything that was preventable, that would be an important issue? Look, we have E. coli outbreaks in romaine lettuce, and suddenly everybody stops eating romaine lettuce, and the agencies at the CDC and the FDA and U.S. Public Health Service go into action and try to find the culprit, and rightly so. But 120,000, mainly men, kill themselves, and it's a shrug of the shoulders. Who cares? Well, on a Veterans Day, I think it's important that we remember these people exist. You see, I've done three documentaries on vets, and I tell them I'm against the wars you fought in, and I explain why, but I'm not against you. I'll help you wherever I can. And for those who deal with everything as a polemic, if a person is sick, if a person is suffering, but they fought in a war that you didn't believe in, suddenly you're against them. Well, how humane is that? That's what identity politics does. You associate a person with any aspect of something you don't like, and then you remove any empathy or capacity to help. And we have nearly a million people out there today suffering. They were in the wrong wars, under the wrong government, for the wrong reasons. But that doesn't mean that we abandon them, turn around, and walk away. Your thoughts, please. 888-874-4888. And I would like to hear from you. And we do have Joel from New Jersey on to talk about the first issue we brought up. Hi, Joel. You're on the air.
Gary, thank you so much for taking my call. Yes, you asked, why do we invest so much money in regime change and not at home? Well, in your wonderful interviews with Danny Sheehan, who has talked about the deep state, this helps to explain a great deal. The agenda of the deep state, which consists of the CIA, the NSA, large corporations, the heads of large corporations, people like the Koch brothers, Paul Singer, the great investors in the voting registration scandals that Greg Palast has brought up. These people have an agenda basically to enrich themselves and to suck money from the U.S. Treasury. They do this through wars and the military. Trump is only an extreme example, a boffo, ridiculous example of the exaggeration of this. But since social progress is no longer really on the agenda, and we have such a dysfunctional political system, and in which both parties are controlled by the deep state and also virtually all of the media, the Times, including the progressive media like The Nation and Mother Jones, and these they talk progressive ideas, but they can't go to certain places.
Joel, hold on there, please. I'm going to let you finish what you were saying, and I appreciate your insights. I want to address this, though. You just now made an important point. You said, in the progressives and their publications like the Native, the Nation, I should say. No, the Nation is not progressive. The Nation is, however, a good liberal publication. It's also sponsoring and has supported the corporate Democratic agenda. Look at the woman who is the managing editor of The Nation. She also is a high member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And the Council on Foreign Relations, which was David Rockefeller brain trust, and from his perspective, he did a good thing. He wanted to see the world and governments and people live in a certain way. Therefore, he brought together, with the vast resources the Rockefellers have and had at that time, a group of people who were considered the best and brightest. These were almost all policy wonks. These are people who had graduated from Ivy League schools, who at one level, I'm sure, believed in public service, but providing that was their way. And now, almost any time that you see any political candidate, they try to get an invitation to speak before the Council on Foreign Relations and other groups, of which there are about 500 groups, think tanks. It could be the Heritage Foundation, or it could be the Free Enterprise Institute, or the Hoover Institute out at Stanford University. And these are well-funded. You never hear of any of these closing their doors for lack of money, nor do you hear them out there raising money. But these are the people who are all interconnected, even if they're not all interrelated on a personal or professional basis, meaning they're aware of each other, and they all serve the same agenda. It's about power. And one of the ways that you maintain and gain power is through money. So those who are the wealthiest, even if they have no expertise in a given area, they're still always invited. If you want to see some of the misanthropes of the world each year go to Davos. First, they're all talking about climate, and yet they fly in private jets. These are people who always have attendance with them. If you ever happen to have one in a one-on-one conversation, they would fail that test immediately when you talk about anything other than superficial talking points in an area they know. These are not universally intelligent people. Everything is superficial. They are coached. Before they go to a place, they might have 4, 5, or 6 people coach them on what to say, how to answer, so they at least get the pretense of being somewhat articulate. But they have no depth of scholarship. Do you really think the Clintons or Obama, any of these people are deep thinkers? They're not. But they try to sell you. You know, he had a Rhodes Scholarship. Rhodes Scholarship doesn't mean diddly squat. Why? Because they're political. Bill Clinton didn't finish his Rhodes Scholarship, by the way. He didn't finish it at Cambridge. And he got his through Fulbright, Senator Fulbright, in Arkansas. You are selected, then you're groomed. Then a whole group of people put a whole facade on you. No, these people are not smart, but they are into power, and power gives them money. And money then gives them more power. You'll have a tech person in to talk about how to deal with starvation in Africa. And they bring in someone who has no brains on this topic, Bono. And suddenly the people who are behind the scenes controlling everything is Monsanto. Yeah, we can help, but first we have to take the land because they've mismanaged it, and then we will find a better way of using the land, and we'll have genetically engineered crops. And that's what they've done. Do you ever hear at any of these discussions them taking hundreds of thousands of people who've lived on that land throughout centuries and removing them? You don't. Do you hear about how they're taking precious little water resources? Remember, only 1% of the world's water is drinkable, potable. And they'll take the water from the people and divert it into their genetic, commercial farm, agricultural projects. Everything is for them to control and power. Political agendas are irrelevant. Power agendas are everything. So these are not progressive people. The nation is not progressive. Mother Jones is not progressive. Many of the people that you see, Rachel Maddow and all the people over there, they're not progressive. They are good, liberal, corporate Democrats. When you're making $37,000 every 24 hours for being on the air, that's your right, that's fine. But how likely are you to tell the truth if telling the truth would embarrass the sponsors who are making that pay possible? I've been fortunate enough in my own career to have published 58 cover stories. It's hard enough to get one. And I've done over 400 main important articles that have gotten wide attention. I only was able to do that because the publishers were not afraid of losing advertisers. In one case, he actually lost $7 million in advertising. He was warned before he took the series on that he was going to lose advertising, and he turned to me in this very little quiet voice he had. He said, "Do you really believe that there are cancer therapies that could help people?" I said, "Yes, there are." And it's not a guess. It's not subjective. I've done my homework. I've gone there. I've followed them for 5 years. And they had the highest cure rates in the world, dwarfing any of the clowns at Sloan Kettering, these other stupid institutions that claim to be the place to go when you have cancer. They make a lot of money. They have a lot of power. They don't have the cures. These other people have the cures. So he turned to his entire staff and he said, "Then we're going to do that." That's progressivism. Because he thought of the honoring and putting power behind the truth of something rather than putting power behind the identity politics of something. You cannot be progressive and be engaged in identity politics or identity anything. You have to look for the truth. Now, wherever that truth is, you got to find it. I'm going to have three experts on this show in the near future. They're all religious experts. One's on Judaism, one's on Christianity, one's on Islam. I'm going to ask them a question. The first question is, do these religions promote love and peace? And they'll say yes or no, and then where's your evidence? Do they promote war, conflict? And they'll promote, and these people are honest. I know who they are. I know their background. They'll tell the truth. You're not going to get that in the mainstream media. You're going to have one person saying yes and the other person saying no, and then they fight each other. And they do it on a superficial level. Progressivism is you're not wrapping yourself in someone else's identity because it serves your needs. You're standing up and you're speaking out. That just confuses the hell out of people. So anytime you hear someone using the word progressive, almost always, it's not. It's not. And yet, there are more progressives today than there are corporate liberals or Democrats or Republicans. That's how many are out there. And almost always you go from being a true believer in liberalism or conservatism and see how it's been hijacked, see how it's been adulterated, see how true liberalism or true conservatism have a lot in common on many different points of view. And those have all been captured and converted and monetized so that it can be consumed and force-fed to the public. So those people then get so frustrated they just withdraw. They become independents. But from that independent state, then they start looking for the truth and find the truth was there in front of them the whole time. They just didn't pay attention to it. And then they're looking at it for what it is. If you want, this summer, I don't know the date yet because I'm still filming and I'm going to hopefully finish in the next 2 weeks, but I'm going to take a little caravan who want to see how I film and the questions I ask. I'm doing three films simultaneously. I'm going on the Indian reservations to show what the culture has gained or lost in the hundreds of years that they have been denied the moniker of being humans, high degree of malnutrition, diabetes, short lifespans, alcoholism, and why. Also, I'm doing one on the new documentary called Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? The New Poor. Now, my original film showed and highlighted the problems of the old poor, the Appalachian poor, the dirt farmers, and Alabama poor. This is the new poor, where people with MDs, PhDs, people who are professionals and are dead broke, sleeping on the street or in a car, all across America. I want people to see the reality of what happens when a person crashes and burns. It was most apparent to me when at 10 o'clock in the morning, I went into a homeless camp in near Cape Canaveral. And it was dense woods, and there were hundreds of people in those woods. And I asked a guy, and he had had a home in Pittsburgh. He was a welder by profession. He went into the Iraq War. He was doing his patriotism duty. He did four tours of duty. He ended up so emotionally scarred that he couldn't relate to his kids and family anymore, couldn't get a job, and started taking drugs, alcohol. He was in chronic pain. He was on the opiates, lost everything, lost his family, lost everything. And so I asked him a simple question. If you had to do it all over again, knowing the people who put you there, the 400,000 people working in the industries, the armaments industries in Washington, D.C., the politicians, Dick Cheney, the George Bush, the Rumsfeld, Condoleezza Rice, and all the other people. And had it not been then, Hillary and Bill Clinton, and or Barack Obama invaded seven countries. Would you do it over? And this man looked at me. He got out of his chair. He was sitting in this broken-down little lawn chair with no air conditioning, no water, no heat, just a little pup tent. And he comes over and he puts his hands on my shoulders. And he said, these SOBs lied to all of us, and I was stupid enough to believe them. And I said, why did you believe them? He said, because I needed to. I needed to believe in them because that's how I was raised. But would I do it again? Never. Would any of these people do it again? What do you think we sit around and talk about all day long is how we allowed ourselves to become prisoners of someone else's in someone else's prison? So a progressive will see that. A corporate liberal or Republican will make an excuse for it and blame someone else but not themselves. So does that put that in perspective, Joel?
Gary, thank you so much. May I add one note of hope?
Sure.
Okay. You know, I've spoken to you about this when I saw you at your Poverty Incorporated movie. The election integrity movement, which now we call the election transparency movement, is trying to restore honesty to our elections, which actually is, you know, the key to power in this country. And this Friday at the Left Forum, I'm running a panel with John Brakey, Bob Fetrakis, Lulu Friesdat, Yana Nago, and Mondale Robinson at 4 o'clock. At room L2.84, and you people can hear the latest in the legal maneuvers to preserve the ballot images to make them actually public, so people can see this and get and stop elections from being stolen. They have been stolen by both parties, mostly by Republicans in national elections and by Democrats in primaries. Okay, to keep everyone in line with what you've been talking about, basically deep state agenda to use a summary term.
Are you familiar with a gentleman named Mitchell Cohen?
Mitchell Cohen?
Cohen, C-O-H-E-N.
No, I don't know him.
Mitchell is a, first of all, he's a very nice man. And he is trying to help, as I believe we all should, the Green Party gubernatorial and anti-war candidate, okay, Howie Hawkins. This Thursday, 7 to 9 p.m. In Brooklyn Heights. And I will post today information so you can get the details. We need people like Jill Stein. We need new third-party candidates, but we need to work together. Like, I'd love for Cynthia Nixon, who has some good principles, to take on some of the progressive principles, some of the green principles, and work to try to challenge the current Cuomo machine. In New York, it's an entirely corrupt machine, but we have to become involved at the local level. I'm glad you are, Joel. Hopefully people will be down at the Left Forum. I've spoken to the Left Forum about three or four times, but I'm on the road last year and this year, so I can't do it. But all the best to you, and I thank you for your call. Let's say hello to Sophia from New Jersey. Hi, Sophia, your turn.
Hi. There is a lack of spirituality in this country, in this world. People are so preoccupied of making a living and buying that big home that the neighbor has without knowing the reason why they need that big home. They work very hard, people, 5 days a week versus 2 days of catching up. Something is very wrong with the system. People should join a local church, a Bible-based church that will teach you, that have good Bible studies, the reason why we came to this world, to understand the word, and people would feel happier. You mentioned that there is a people not interested in the culture of other countries. I grew up in Ukraine. We were not rich. My family, our middle-class family, my father was working, my mother took care of my brother and myself, but we had an instrument. They made sure that I study music beside the regular school. There are so many places that people can get culture, like Pennsylvania. A very smart Jewish man opened up a theater called Sight and Sound in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where Bible comes to life and they have live animals in the show. And there is never an empty seat in their theater. And people are happy. They want to learn. They want to become more spiritual. And becoming more spiritual will help people to understand the reason and why we came here on this planet Earth and become better people and be more interested in the culture of other people, other countries.
Thank you for that. I believe that we have to have an inclusive approach to spirituality. Religion, for many people, is one way to gain that. Spiritual concepts of moral equation is another. How do I want to be treated? That's how I should treat other people at the high end of the spectrum of kindness, sensitivity, and if I can help another person who's suffering, I have a moral responsibility to do so. If you have a gift in life, you give a gift. That is the basis of spirituality. In some cases, religions have exemplified that. In some cases, religions, as we see right now in Indonesia, where we see a purging of Muslims by Buddhists, and then Buddhists then purging Muslims and purging Buddhists. It's a conflict back and forth, using tenets from the religious belief to do so. When these cannot be solved through violence. Conflicts exist. They're not going to be solved militarily. And I believe that too often we do not look at nonviolent spiritual ways of resolving any of our conflicts. And if a religion is nonviolent, if it's not based upon a cult, if it treats women with the same respect and the same equal rights as men, then I would support it. But I believe that we are advancing, many people are advancing to where they are a walking exemplification of ethical behavior. And I think that's what you were getting at, Sophia. Thank you very much. We'll end our program today with Jeff from New Jersey. Hi, Jeff. Your turn.
Hey, how you doing, Gary?
Good.
Yeah, good. Well, I wanted to speak about the what's happening to the young men, and I want to go back to the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. And one of the things that I think that's really going on, and I listened to Camille Paglia, is that, you know, women are coming into men's spaces. Men don't really have anywhere to go, especially young boys. Now, if you're reading the messages on the wall, if you're a young man, you are the criminal. You are the bad person in society. And everything is about the girls, you know. Girls getting help here, girls getting help there. And it's not really fair, you know. And what are they really looking at? You know, what are they seeing as far as their future with a woman? Because now the woman is a combatant. And, you know, how do you establish a family? How do you, you know, find someone like your mother or, you know, et cetera, et cetera? When you're always fighting, you know. And like one of the gentlemen said, there's no recourse. You know, you can't get into a face of a woman or you lose. It's like beating up the little kid. You know, if you beat him up, you're the bully. If you get beat, you know, you're not much of a man. But we need to get back to separating the men and the women and giving men their own space back. I think that's going to be that will help solve some of the problem. And then on the message of spirituality, there is, when you're dealing with religion, that becomes partly man's doctrine and not necessarily the word of divine spirit, the word of God. If we study the word of God, like a young lady was saying just before me, you will find that the spirituality is in there. You know, how to treat people is in there. It is a matter, you know, evil can take the place of good in that it will, you know, they say that sin starts in the pulpit and works its way out the door. And I think that's a lot of what we're seeing because, you know, religion wields power. Because if you can be a chief in a religion, you can rule over a bunch of people. You know, you get your power, and this is one of the things that we're seeing, of course, in politics with these narcissists and some of these movements where they're taking a lead and just to satisfy their own thing, to keep things out of conflict, to keep people separated.
Jeff, that is going to be for a longer conversation than what we have today, and we will be having that, as you'll see from the three experts I'm going to have on for an hour, talking about this. And I'm going to hold them accountable because I've done my homework, so I know which of their texts say that you can engage in violence and which say you engage in forgiveness. You can't have it both ways. You can't say we're all about peace and then there's scripture that some person could interpret as, well, unless I want to follow this. We'll get into all that on an upcoming program. I just want to mention that this coming Sunday evening, early evening, I'm going to be doing a 3-hour webinar on heart disease, diabetes, and obesity. Natural solutions with protocols. If you want to join that with me, just go to prn.fm, and you'll see the Gary Nall, and then it'll show you that. It starts at 6:30 this coming Sunday. Heart disease, diabetes, and obesity, the natural solutions. Thank you all for listening on this Memorial Day. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow, including our original in-depth investigative report will be tomorrow. Have a nice day.
Let me hear the worshipers! Where's all of my praises? I want everybody around the world to put your hands together because all the praise belongs to God. Here we go. It's to our God.
Take it up, every praise.
It's to our God.
It's to our